What's going on, everyone? Welcome back to another episode of the JT Sports Podcast. I'm your host, JT. Have a few thoughts that I wanted to come on here and share with you guys on this episode. I'm going to be discussing why the Denver Broncos should tank for quarterback in 2025. It just makes a ton of sense. You recently released Russell Wilson, which ended up resulting in an $85 million record-setting dead cap hit, which puts major constraints on not only how you can improve your roster, but how you can go about addressing the quarterback position. You're picking 12th overall in this year's draft, which doesn't put you in a good area to walk away with any of the best quarterback prospects from this year's draft class. If you want to Bo Nix or J.J. McCarthy, you're most likely going to have to trade up into the top 10 to get one of those guys. And the Broncos don't necessarily have a ton of assets that would be appealing for a team in the top 10 wanting to trade down with them. And there aren't a lot of great options in the free agency market at quarterback neither. So it just makes a lot of sense to me for Denver to just mail in this upcoming season. Regardless, if you take a quarterback anyway, you're not going to be good anyway. So you might as well try to tank for the best quarterback in the 2025 draft. Now, who is the quarterback that I believe Denver should tank for? We're going to get into that shortly. When Florida made the decision to fire Dan Mullen back in November of 2021, many people at the time felt it was a necessary firing. And then they replaced Dan Mullen with an up-and-coming G5 head coach who many people were high on, and Billy Napier. Now, 3 years removed from Dan Mullen's firing, I believe that Florida may have been a little bit too impatient with Dan Mullen, and they gave him the pink slip a little bit too soon. I got some reasons why. And then Justin Fields, you know, this dude is arguably the most polarizing player in the NFL right now. He's been the prime focus of NFL offseason discussion because we all want to know what's going to happen in terms of his future. Is he going to remain a Chicago Bear? Are they going to trade him elsewhere, allow him to get a fresh start with the new coaching staff, hopefully a better roster? Many fans and people in the media believe that Justin Fields has the potential to be one of the best quarterbacks in the game, but I don't feel that way. I also think that he is heavily overrated by many fans and people in the media. I'm going to explain why. And Russell Wilson, a few days ago, recently met with the Steelers organization. I think that meeting was a giant waste of everybody's time. Before I get into it, if you haven't already, hit that like button, subscribe to the channel. Remember that we're not just a YouTube channel. We are a podcast, and you can find us on all podcasting platforms. Apple, Google, Spotify, Amazon, wherever you get your podcast from, the JT Sports Podcast is available. If you have a question that you would like answered on the future episode, you can send them in the DMs on Instagram at JT Sports_ or on X at JT Sports_. Make sure to also follow us on those platforms so you can stay up to date with everything that's going on with the podcast. Now, let's dive into it. The Denver Broncos are in a really bad situation right now when you think about the state of their team. They recently released Russell Wilson, taking a record-setting $85 million dead cap hit, which means they're not going to have a lot of money to spend on improving the roster. And it most likely means that they're going to have to trade away a couple of key assets to get more capital to rebuild this team. And they just traded away Jerry Jeudy for two late-round selections to the Cleveland Browns. Cortland Sutton could be next. They got rid of safety Justin Simmons, one of the best safeties in the league. Patrick Surtain could be on the trading block. And for the quarterback position of the Denver Broncos, you're not really in a good spot right now to come away going into the 2024 season with a significant upgrade at the QB position. Because with you getting rid of Russell Wilson, taking all that dead cap hit, you're not going to have a lot of money to get any of the top best quarterback options available in free agency. Kirk Cousins is already leaning towards going to Atlanta. Then you're going to have Baker Mayfield, who potentially most likely is going back to Tampa Bay. So there's not a lot of appealing options in free agency at quarterback. In the draft, you're picking 12th overall. And realistically, if you want to walk away with any of the top QBs in this class this year, you're going to have to trade up at least into the top 8. And the Broncos don't really have a lot of draft capital that would be enticing for a team picking in the top 8 to want to trade down with them. And they probably won't come away with any of the top 4 or top 5 best QBs in this class. Rather that be JJ McCarthy, Bo Nix, Drake May, or Jaden Daniels. You're going to have to trade up to get one of those guys. I don't see any QB falling to the Broncos at 12 that is at least considered a top 5 quarterback in the class. So from looking at what the Broncos have to work with in free agency, not really a lot, not really a lot of intriguing options. Going to have to give up a little bit, maybe then some, to trade up in the draft. It just makes a ton of sense, at least to me, for the Broncos to tank for Shedeur Sanders next year. He's playing right down the street. All right, so you're going to have more opportunities to get more film, more notes on him than any other team in the NFL. Plus, he's already an NFL-ready quarterback. If he would have declared for the 2024 NFL draft, Shedeur Sanders, without any doubt in my mind, would be the unquestioned quarterback to end this class behind Caleb Williams. He's not as talented as what Caleb is, but he isn't too far off. He's a really good passer. He's really accurate, makes fantastic decisions with the football. He goes through his progressions. The only big knock on Shedeur is that he holds the football too long. He tries to make too many big plays at times instead of just taking what the defense gives him. But you can improve that. And if Sean Payton can get his hands on a quarterback prospect like a Shedeur Sanders in 2025, it would make all the sense in the world for Denver just to go ahead and try to mail in this season. And for those of you guys who say, oh, tanking is a terrible idea, JT. Well, I mean, Denver isn't going to be good anyway. At best, Denver possibly is going to be a 7-win team this year, maybe 8 max. I mean, you got no money. You're going to have to trade and get rid of some of your best players, and you're not going to be able to successfully replace those dudes in free agency, because what money do you have to spend? And what assets do you have to trade up for a quarterback this year? If you just go ahead, tank for Shedeur Sanders, trade down from 12, try to get another first-round pick for next year's draft class, plus you get a first-round pick or maybe two of them if you trade away Patrick Surtain, you could have 4 2025 first-round selections. Even if you don't have the number one overall pick or you're not in a position to select Shedeur Sanders, you'll have more than enough draft capital to trade up for him. Shedeur Sanders is worth tanking for. The Broncos quarterback position has been a disaster ever since Peyton Manning rolled off into the sunset after that Super Bowl in 2015. They've been through so many quarterbacks. It's been Russian roulette at quarterback for the Broncos, and it's been really tough to watch. Brock Osweiler, Teddy Bridgewater, Drew Locke, Paxton Lynch. I mean, when does it stop? When do you find stability at quarterback? If the Broncos are ever going to become relevant in the AFC West again, they're going to have to find a quarterback who's talented enough, who's skilled enough to go toe-to-toe with Patrick Mahomes and Justin Herbert. We already know Patrick Mahomes is on his way to becoming the greatest of all time at the quarterback position, and Justin Herbert is one of the most physically gifted quarterbacks in the league. Who do the Broncos have? Who in this draft class could the Broncos realistically get that gives them a realistic shot of winning a Super Bowl in the foreseeable future? If you can't walk away with any of the elite QB prospects from this year's draft class, why settle when you could just go ahead and get the next best thing in Shedeur Sanders? You can say what you want about Shedeur Sanders' last name bringing a bunch of attention and a bunch of hype, but if there's anybody who's built and equipped to handle the high expectations that comes with being a number one overall pick potentially, it would be Shedeur Sanders. He was the heart and soul, the meat and potatoes of that Colorado team in 2023. And if you take him off last year's Colorado team, not only do they not win a single game, but they probably get blown out in every single matchup. The only reason Colorado won the amount of games that they did year one with Deion Sanders at the helm at head coach was mainly due to how good Shedeur Sanders was as a quarterback. The quarterback position has been a dire problem for Denver. You just made one of the NFL's worst trades ever when you gave up all those assets to get Russell Wilson and it backfired in your face. Why not go ahead and tank for a quarterback who is close to a guaranteed hit in the NFL than anybody else you're going to have a realistic shot at getting in this draft class? Michael Penix is an intriguing prospect, but are you really willing to gamble with the injury concerns that he has? Do you trust the medicals that he can have a healthy career? I know he's been healthy the last two seasons, but to me, it just doesn't seem like a great option when Michael Penix's ceiling at best possibly is a top 11 quarterback. Shedeur Sanders gives you high upside at the most premium position in the NFL. People think you can win with any quarterback. No, the fuck you can't. You're in the AFC, home to the majority of the NFL's top quarterbacks. You need a great quarterback to be able to win. Shedeur Sanders would give you that. All you got to do is have one down season and he'll be yours. And it doesn't make a difference if you draft a quarterback this year. You're still going to be terrible. Like, let's just be honest, Broncos fans. Like, I hate to break it to you, but if you think this team, with what they're going to have to do to make up for all that dead cap they're about to take, is going to be able to make the playoffs, then you're just delusional. All right, the Broncos are not going to be a playoff team. They're going to be one of the worst teams in the NFL from a pure talent standpoint. And the only way they're going to be able to pull off a few wins than expected, other than, you know, only winning maybe three or four games, maybe they win one or two extra, is because of how good of a coach Sean Payton is. But even then, doesn't matter how great of a coach you are, if you don't have a good team and you don't have a good quarterback who you can depend on. Imagine Sean Payton if he gets his hands on Shedeur Sanders. He's one of the greatest offensive minds in the history of football. For everybody that's calling Sean Payton overrated, I would like to ask you, how bad was Russell Wilson before Sean Payton arrived under Nathaniel Hackett? And how different did Russell Wilson look this year with Sean Payton calling the plays? I'm just saying, you can say all you want about Sean Payton being overrated, but the dude has a winning record without his starting quarterbacks. He's won with guys such as Teddy Bridgewater, Taysom Hill, Jameis Winston. So if he can win with those quarterbacks, imagine what he can do with a guy like a Shedeur Sanders. You know, like, if the Broncos are ever going to get serious again about being a Super Bowl contender, they're going to have to find a real answer at quarterback. And it probably isn't going to come to you this year. Maybe you can get J.J. McCarthy at 12, but even if he is on the board, me and many other NFL fans share the same opinion that J.J. McCarthy is a bust waiting to happen. Maybe Sean Payton could help J.J. McCarthy reach his ceiling in the NFL since he is such a great offensive mind, but it just makes so much more sense to get Shedeur. He's playing in your backyard. He's right down the street. You're going to have so many opportunities to watch him in person, watch him live, get a lot of film and notes on him. Listen, like, Shedeur Sanders should be the Broncos' number one priority at quarterback. All right, try to find what you can get for the best bang for what you can afford at QB this year. That probably means bringing a guy like Jameis Winston in on a cheap deal for maybe a year or two, but that's fine. Because who else out there can you realistically afford to get that can be a proven upgrade? Nobody. So you get Jameis Winston or a QB like Sam Darnold for a season, they'll be able to keep you afloat, maybe win you 5-6 games. And in the meantime, you know, you'll be bad enough where you'll be in position to either draft Shedeur Sanders number one overall, or you can possibly trade up for him if you trade down from 12 this year, trade Patrick Surtain, and use those first round selections to trade up for Shedeur in 2025. But Denver needs to start getting serious about trying to find the long-term answer at quarterback. If you can't come away with any of the best QB prospects this year, why not go ahead and try to tank to put yourself in position to get the unquestioned QB1 in next year's draft? So Shedeur Sanders, if the Broncos were to tank for him this season, I think it would be a very good move. For the people that say tanking doesn't work in the NFL, ask Cincinnati about it. Do they have regrets taking for Joe Burrow? I don't think so. Tanking works if you can actually tank and draft the right quarterback. Shedeur Sanders is the kind of quarterback that can change the trajectory of the Broncos franchise and can make them relevant again. I'm about to start a war in the comment section among you Florida Gator fans. So 3 years ago, back in November of 2021, Florida fired head coach Dan Mullen. Dan Mullen took them to 3 New Year's Six bowl games. He was 2-1 in those bowls. He also won 10 and 11 games his first two seasons. And then in 2020, he loses to Alabama in the SEC championship. They finished the season out 8-4 after, for the majority of the season, looking like a prime playoff contender. And then in 21, everything that could have went wrong for Dan Mullen went wrong and then some. And they fire him. And everybody says that Dan Mullen had to get fired because he can't recruit and he just isn't that great of a coach. Despite the fact that Dan Mullen, for a coach who couldn't recruit, his recruiting classes at Florida, first year 2018, 14th, 2019, top 10, 9th overall according to 247, 9th overall again in 2020, and they finished 12th his final season at Florida. But Billy Napier, the dude who Florida hired to replace Dan Mullen, because going 8-4, 11-2, and 10-3, and having a 34-15 overall record wasn't good enough, so they bring in Sun Belt Billy, or G5 Billy, who was a really hot head coaching candidate at the time. All right, there were a lot of big-time programs who wanted Billy Napier's services. So the decision to hire Billy Napier wasn't a bad one. It's just a decision that hasn't looked like an upgrade from what you had previously and Dan Mullen. And for everybody that says the recruiting was so bad under Dan Mullen and it's a large reason why he had to go, where's the improvement in recruiting under Billy Napier? Because if anything, you've gotten worse when it comes to recruiting. Dan Mullen's average recruiting rank at Florida during his four seasons with the program was 11th. Do you know what Billy Napier's average recruiting rank is on an annual basis his first couple of years down in Gainesville? It's 15th. He was 18th in recruiting in 2022. They finished in 13th 2023. And this season, or this past recruiting cycle, after Florida started out really hot, they were like top 5 or in the top 10. And then all of a sudden, they fall out of the top 10 recruiting and they find themselves finishing at 15th. And not just is the recruiting taking a step back from what it was under Dan Mullen to Billy Napier, but the on-the-field product as well. Say what you want to about how the team quit on Dan Mullen in his final games at Florida. One thing that you can't deny is that the dude was a pretty solid coach. He won games for Florida. He took you to 3 New Year's Six bowl games his first 3 seasons. You fire the coach that in 3 years at Gainesville or at Florida, he went 10-3, 11-2, 8-4, taking you to the SEC championship, which you were pretty competitive in that game, by the way, against Alabama that year. And instead, you say, you know what? It's not worth giving this dude an extra year. But yet, you're giving Billy Napier his third season after this program has done nothing but been stagnant and decline. I mean, like, the play calling for Billy Napier, because not only is he the head coach, but he's the play caller, is atrocious. Everybody said that Anthony Richardson held Florida's offense back in 2022, Billy Napier's first season at Florida, right? Well, tell me why Anthony Richardson ended up being better in the NFL, only playing in a few games with the Colts than what he ever did with the Florida Gators. If Anthony Richardson wasn't really that good for Florida, then him making the transition from college to pro should have been a lot tougher than what it seemed to be for him, because he made the transition pretty seamless. Not only is the on-the-field product not great out of Billy Napier, but you look at his staff hires. Austin Armstrong was supposed to be a huge upgrade at defensive coordinator for Florida. We didn't see any improvement out of the defense last year. The defense has been as bad as what it's been the last 4 or 5 years when you had guys like Todd Grantham calling the plays on defense. There is no improvement that Florida football is making under Billy Napier. At least under Dan Mullen, you were going to New Year's Six bowl games. You were winning double-digit games. I mean, year one, you got destroyed in a Las Vegas bowl by Oregon State. You only won 5 games last season. And this year, things aren't going to do anything but get harder for you, because you have one of the toughest schedules, if not the hardest schedule in college football. Like, God bless Billy Napier this season. But is it really outrageous to say that maybe Florida, you know, pulled the trigger on firing Dan Mullen way too soon? For everybody that says Dan Mullen can't recruit, Billy Napier says, hold my tea, he's been a worse recruiter. And with the current state that college football is in now, where recruiting isn't really as big to building a championship team now as what it used to be, because you can build a team through the transfer portal. Look at the approach that Mike Norvell has taken at Florida State. He's brought in a couple of good recruits, but he's also mixed that in with a couple of good transfers, and not guys who are just one and done grad transfers. He brought in Jordan Travis, developed him. Same thing with Johnny Wilson. You look at what Lane Kiffin is doing down there in Oxford, Mississippi at Ole Miss. He's doing the similar thing that Mike Norvell has done the last couple of years at Florida State. Mixing recruiting with getting in guys from the transfer portal that have 3-4 years of eligibility left, develop them, bring in a couple of one-and-done guys out of the portal, and build your team up that way. Dan Mullen, there's no reason why you can't tell me that he wouldn't have been able to successfully utilize the transfer portal. And let's not act like Dan Mullen wasn't held back somewhat internally by Florida's program, because when Billy got to Florida, everybody makes the excuse for Billy Napier how he wasn't able to figure out how to get along with the boosters for NIL when he first got on the scene for Gainesville. Facilities were being revamped. If you're going to use that same argument to make the defense of Billy Napier, you gotta have the same energy with Dan Mullen. Because if the NIL backing was problematic for Billy Napier, do you not think that things were just a little bit worse for Dan Mullen? And then they didn't really have a lot of great facilities at the time neither. You see, Florida has this philosophy that they believe that with the right coach, they should be an immediate contender in like 2-3 years. And maybe you're not the same program that you once viewed yourself to be. And it's a harsh reality to swallow, because I'm a Miami Hurricanes fan, and I understand that what we are in 2024 is not anything that we were in the early 2000s. And that's okay, because when expectations go down, you have to change your philosophy about how you go about handling your head coaches. Jim McElwain wasn't that bad, but I can understand firing him. He just was subpar at best. But Dan Mullen, You fired the guy who in his first 3 years took you to 3 New Year's Six bowl games consecutively. You had 2 double-digit back-to-back double-digit winning seasons. And then, yeah, he had an 8-4 season. Things went off the deep end. And the second half of 2020, that was a weird year. And 2021, things really took a turn for the worse. But he just had one losing season out of his first 3 being pretty successful. And yet, he doesn't get the benefit of a doubt. Oh, well, maybe firing him would just be a little bit too premature. Let's give him one more year to figure things out, because it's not like the dude isn't 34-15. But meanwhile, Billy Napier is 11-14 his first 2 years at Florida. And please don't give me the shit about how Dan Mullen left Florida in such a bad situation that it was going to be impossible for Billy Napier to succeed. Let's cut it out. Okay, we need to cut it out. And I really believe that a lot of Florida fans who try to make it seem like Dan Mullen is a bad coach, they really just don't want to come to the reality that maybe Dan Mullen just wasn't a good fit for Florida. But he definitely is way better than Jim McElwain, than Will Muschamp, and definitely Billy Napier. In the last decade, Dan Mullen has probably been the most successful coach that Florida football has had. So we look at the decision to fire him 3 years in the future, present day, now, March 9, 2024. It was a really impatient move by Florida. And it's a move that has backfired majorly in their face. Billy Napier still learning on the job. He's nowhere as good as an X's and O's guy as Dan Mullen was. Do you remember the time when people actually truthfully believed, not a lot, but a good amount, that Dan Mullen was a better coach than Kirby Smart because he was just better at the X's and O's? He was better on the whiteboard than what Kirby Smart was? Now, although that was a stupid statement and a stupid opinion that many people had, that just goes to show you that many Florida fans were very high on Dan Mullen. And just firing him after 1-5-6 season, when we see guys like Sam Pittman still getting multiple opportunities, you know, you're giving a third season to a guy that has showed no promise. There's nothing about Billy Napier that as a Florida fan should give you reasons to believe that he's the guy to get this program back to the national championship. I mean, recruiting has gotten worse. It already wasn't that great in a lot of you people's opinions under Dan Mullen, and it's even worse under Billy Napier. So what does that show? We think back on the move to fire Dan Mullen, and we all feel like it was necessary, because you think about how things were starting to turn left ever since the season before 2021. And 2020, when you start off hot, then you lose the LSU's JV team thanks to Marco Wilson throwing somebody's cleat like it was a damn three-point shot. And then, you know, like you lose your final game of the season. Well, the final game of the Dan Mullen era to Eli Drinkwitz in Missouri. But Florida, to me, made an emotional decision. It was not necessary to fire Dan Mullen. It really wasn't. You're firing this dude after one losing season. And for everybody that says it was a necessary firing, what about this move has benefited Florida? How is Florida a better program now under Billy Napier than what they were under Dan Mullen? Because to me, it looks like this program has further fallen under Billy Napier. Because under Dan Mullen, they definitely weren't going 6-7 and 5-7 every season. They went 5-6 Dan Mullen's final season. Previous 3 years, he got fired after going 8-4 SEC championship appearance, 11-2 New Year's Six Bowl win, 10-3 New Year's Six Bowl win. So you get a head coach who has a winning record, he's pretty successful at every program he's been, and you replace him with a guy that doesn't have a lot of experience at coaching, at a school, at a job of this magnitude when the expectations are so high. Billy Napier worked his way up. You forgot what he was doing at Mississippi State with Dak Prescott. Imagine if Dan Mullen was the head coach of last year's Florida team, I promise you, that offense would have been so much better. Hell, if Dan Mullen would have gotten at least one more season to make things work with Anthony Richardson, like, we get it that he had a lot of favoritism towards starting upperclassmen. All right, he didn't want to move on from Emory Jones when he should have had, and we get that. But with Anthony Richardson being the QB1 for Florida in 2021, Florida possibly could have won 8 games. Like, what are the biggest wins of Billy Napier's Florida tenure up to this point? What, beating Tennessee at home this year? Beating Utah at home? What are the big road wins that Billy Napier has had? Hasn't had any. He's had a lot of embarrassing losses, though, and a lot of boneheaded decision-making and play-calling. I mean, Billy Napier, I like him. I'm not rooting for him to fail. I actually thought Billy Napier was going to succeed. I say this so many times every time I talk about Billy Napier, so I can prove to you guys I'm not a hater. Go watch my older videos. I was a big fan of his when he was coaching at Louisiana, when he had Levi Lewis and Elijah Mitchell, and they were winning the Sun Belt Conference. But looking at how recruiting hasn't improved, and that's been the biggest selling point for Billy Napier, how he was a coach who was always going to have Florida prepared in every single game, that hasn't been true. Every selling point for Billy Napier that was made when Florida made the decision to hire him a few years back has been mute points. We haven't seen anything that makes Billy Napier a special head coach and a coach that should give Florida fans reason to believe he's the guy to turn it around. You fired Dan Mullen way too soon. And I think that it's fair to say that at this point, because the Billy Napier experiment has been a total disaster. Recruiting's gone down. The on-the-field product has gone down. Like, I get it. You're Florida football. If you believe that you're better than 8-4, 5-6, making it to the SEC championship, making it to 3 New Year's Six bowl games, that's understandable. But you would think that your next hire would be a guy who could, without a question, get Florida back to the upper echelon of college football, being in the playoffs, being a national contender, playing in more big games. But that hasn't been the case. Florida was more relevant, and they were a better program under Dan Mullen than what they are right now under Billy Napier. I really don't think it's too much of an opinion. The facts and statistics back it up, too. Billy Napier has won less games his first 2 seasons at Florida than what Dan Mullen did. And 2, recruiting has been worse under Billy Napier than what it ever was under Dan Mullen, for a guy who everybody yelled at you every day couldn't recruit to save his life. And who cares if Billy Napier didn't inherit a lot of talent? You know, if this dude is a good coach, he should be able to make do with what Florida has. It's not like Florida just has a dog shit roster. You know, at best, Florida the last 2 years should have been a 7, maybe 8 win team. Dan Mullen is one of those coaches that, with how good he is at the schematics and the X's and O's side of the game, he can elevate a team that doesn't have great talent. You know, and it's not like every recruit that Dan Mullen brought in didn't work out. You know, yeah, the recruits that he brought in, a lot of them had off-the-field troubles and whatnot, but there were a fair share of gems that he had. Jason Marshall, Kyle Pitts. I mean, it's not like every recruit part of Dan Mullen's recruiting classes at Florida was a dud. I mean, how many freshmen are making impact for Florida right now? You know, like, Billy Napier hasn't done a great job at recruiting, nor a player evaluation. So looking back on the decision to fire Dan Mullen 3 years after the firing took place, right now, to me, it's safe to say that Florida made a huge mistake firing Dan Mullen, and they fired him way too soon. They gave him the pink slip way too early. They should have given him at least one more season to figure things out, because I definitely believe that he could have. But you're giving the 3rd season to a guy that all he's done is further drag Florida football near the bottom of the abyss. And if this continues to transpire for Florida and you continue to make the wrong hires at head coach, how many more years and how many more failed head coaches is it going to take until Florida becomes what Nebraska football is right now in the Big Ten, a dead former blue blood program? I don't know if people view Florida as a blue blood, but to me they are. I don't view them as that anymore. I mean, when's the last time Florida has actually been a relevant part of the national championship picture? Haven't heard of them being in that discussion since Urban Meyer and Tim Tebow. And I was in fucking second grade when Florida was winning BCS championships. So, you know, going back to firing Dan Mullen, a lot of you Florida fans are going to hate to admit it, but it was a really bad decision. And it was a move that was made out of impatience. And it was a move that, quite frankly, with how Billy Napier is playing out right now, looked like a terrible hire and a terrible move getting rid of Dan Mullen, the coach who won two New Year's Six Bowl games. He had several winning seasons. All of a sudden, he has one down season, and the dude gets the scissors. Crazy. Justin Fields gets a lot of love from people in the national media and NFL fans on social media. A lot of people make the defense for the Chicago Bears not trading Justin Fields for him not having a great supporting cast, not having a great coaching staff, and not really being put in the best situation to succeed. And that's understandable. But when I look at Justin Fields from an unbiased standpoint, I don't see what everybody else sees in Justin Fields. You see, I think that a lot of people are infatuated with Justin Fields because they think about what he could be if he puts it all together. And what he could be is similar to what Lamar Jackson is right now, a true dual threat quarterback. He can kill you on the ground, run for over 1,000 in a year with his legs, and he also can kill you with his arm with how good of a passer he is. He is the true definition of what a dual threat quarterback in the NFL should look like. Meanwhile, for Justin Fields, at this point in his career, going into year four, he has already shown us what he is. And what he is a really athletic quarterback that's better with his legs than what he is with his arm. Why is that? Well, Justin Fields is the worst fourth quarter quarterback in the National Football League. He had the worst passer rating in the fourth quarter since he's been the starter of the Chicago Bears. He has one of the worst completion percentages of any quarterback that is a starter in the fourth quarter of games. And he has a ton of devastating interceptions that he's thrown with the game on the line. You can't trust Justin Fields in late game situations. And you also can't trust Justin Fields to be the right quarterback to lead your franchise to Super Bowl glory. We just saw what Patrick Mahomes did against Brock Purdy in the Super Bowl. Brock Purdy wasn't bad. He played a really good game. The only difference is that he didn't play up to the level of a future all-time great like Patrick Mahomes did. Patrick Mahomes, his final drive of overtime resulted in Kansas City winning the game by a touchdown. Brock Purdy's final drive of the Super Bowl resulted in San Francisco having to take 3 points and eventually losing. If you want to be able to be a consistent Super Bowl contender, you need to have a consistently great quarterback. Everybody keeps saying how Justin Fields needs more weapons. He needs better wide receivers. He needs Marvin Harrison Jr. When I just saw Patrick Mahomes win a Super Bowl with his two best options being an old, aging Travis Kelce and a first-year wideout, Rashee Rice, who was a mid-round selection. How many of y'all know how to spell Marquez Valdes-Scantling? How many of you guys know about Sky Moore? How many of you guys can name more than three receivers on Kansas City's team not named Rashee Rice or Travis Kelce? You can't. Yes, I get that every quarterback needs to have talent around him to be successful. But the best quarterbacks in the league don't need to have a complete team to be able to win. We saw Joe Burrow, his second season in the league, coming off a season-ending injury his rookie season, take Cincinnati to the Super Bowl with a mega-talented group of receivers, but one of the worst offensive lines to ever make the Super Bowl. That shows you what an elite quarterback is able to do. An elite quarterback is able to overcome certain limitations. Now, not any quarterback can overcome, you know, certain limitations. The better the quarterback, the more they can overcome, the less they can win with. But when you have a guy like a Tua or a Dak Prescott or Justin Fields, they're only as good as the supporting cast that you have around them. They're not somebody that's going to elevate the team per se. They're a quarterback that could possibly win you some games if you give them a good team. But if you're asking them to have to make up for inefficiencies that you may have, such as not having great receivers or not having a great offensive line, they can't overcome that. That's what separates the elite quarterbacks like Mahomes, Lamar, Josh Allen, Joe Burrow from guys like Dak Prescott and Tua. They can win with less. If you're making excuses for how Justin Fields needs more to win, you're further proving why the Chicago Bears need to move on from him and why they need to tank, or not tank, but draft Caleb Williams this year. Caleb Williams is seen as a generational quarterback prospect. He's that kind of quarterback that could go toe-to-toe with the Patrick Mahomes if he reaches his upside. He's the kind of quarterback that can still win you championships or still keep you in the championship conversation, even if you don't have a roster that is complete from top to bottom. That's what the luxury having a generational or elite quarterback gives you. Justin Fields doesn't give you that. He's not a quarterback that you go into the fourth quarter with 2 minutes left, down the touchdown, we need to go to overtime. Is Justin Fields going to be able to deliver us a 2-minute drive to send us to overtime? You don't really have a lot of confidence that he's that kind of quarterback. He's not one of those quarterbacks that you say, oh yeah, like we got Justin Fields, we're going to win. He's 10-28 as a starter. And I'm not one of those people who judges quarterbacks strictly based on their win-loss record. But you still have to take into account that the quarterback position is the most important, the most impactful position in the National Football League. And if we're going to give Justin Fields, you know, all the credit in the world for when Chicago wins, we got to give him all the blame when they lose. Because if you're having 16 interceptions in a fourth quarter with the game in your hands, that shows you're unreliable. Think about Justin Fields' best performance of last year. The Denver Broncos, the dude had like 4 touchdowns. He couldn't be stopped. But yet, with the game on the line, when the Chicago Bears needed him to seal the victory for them, what did he do? He gave it away. Same thing with Zach Wilson this year. Do you remember when the New York Jets almost beat Kansas City on Sunday night? Zach Wilson played the best game of his NFL career and still gave the game away and lost in the end. He's just not a winning quarterback. And Justin Fields, I'm not saying he's not a winning quarterback, but he's not the kind of quarterback that you can build a team around and say, yeah, we can win the championship. I think Justin Fields is going to be one of those quarterbacks that he bounces around a lot. He starts for several different teams, and he's never going to be bad, in my opinion. I always believe that Justin Fields should be no worse than a top 20 QB, but I believe that we are starting to see the ceiling being reached by Justin Fields. And Justin Fields' ceiling is a better version of what Vince Young was. You know, he may be able to get you to the playoffs a couple of years here and there. He may have a couple of Pro Bowl seasons, but he's not going to be a consistent passer. That's just not what he is. He'll never become what Lamar Jackson is. Lamar Jackson is a unicorn. You want to see all of the failed Lamar Jackson replicas? Look at Malik Willis. He's about to be out the league. Look at Justin Fields right now, 10-28 as a starter. You can say all you want to about him not having this, him not having that. Bro, the Chicago Bears were a 7-win football team this year. They had one of the best defenses in the NFL after week 9 of the season. And they were in a lot of close games during that stretch. The reason why they lost them was because they have a quarterback who just doesn't know how to get it done in big moments with the game on the line. And that's why Chicago should move on from Justin Fields. And that's why he is massively overhyped. I get that the dude is great in fantasy football. He makes a lot of big splash plays. But he's not a consistent thrower of the football. And no matter how dynamic he is with his legs, it's a passing league. They say it all the time. You have to be able to throw the football at a high level if you want to win in today's NFL. And Justin Fields hasn't demonstrated the ability to do that. He's also going into his fourth season. There aren't too many quarterbacks at this point in their career going into year four when all of a sudden they just hit their stride and they become elite or they become a Pro Bowl caliber talent. The last quarterback we saw that happen with was Alex Smith when he got blessed with Jim Harbaugh as his head coach in San Francisco. 9 times out of 10, what you are going into your fourth season is who you are as a player. The improvement isn't really that gigantic. And for Justin Fields, he never is going to be a good enough passer to result in you winning a championship. He'll be a good enough quarterback where he'll have you in contention to make it to the playoffs. You may win a playoff game or two, but if you make it to the NFC Conference Championship, you're not going to win because he's not a quarterback who is dependable in late game situations. He can't throw the football well. He's not accurate most of the times. He doesn't go through his progressions. He doesn't make good decisions with the football. And it's evident with this fourth quarter turnover numbers. How can I trust a quarterback? How can you tell me, yeah, like all he needs is Marvin Harrison. Marvin Harrison is all of a sudden going to make him a better decision maker with the game on the line? Marvin Harrison all of a sudden is going to help Justin Fields improve as a passer? Like, I get the thinking. You get another wide receiver, it makes things easier for Justin Fields. But at the same time, how much of this falls on Justin Fields? That is the problem that I have. And that's why he is extremely overhyped. Because nobody wants to put a fair value on what Justin Fields is as a quarterback. Everybody wants to keep saying, man, just wait. He needs more time. Bruh, we're into year four now, and we still don't know who he is. We don't. And since we don't know who he is as a quarterback, that tells you what he is now. At best, he'll be a top 12 quarterback. He'll be able to be a Pro Bowler here and there, get a team to the playoffs maybe 3-4 years throughout his career, but he's not going to be a quarterback that results in you being able to consistently be a contender. And I know a lot of Bears fans really love Justin Fields. He's a great dude off the field. Many of his teammates love him. I love him. I've been following Justin Fields' football career ever since he was on QB1 Beyond the Lights. Back before that show went on Netflix. And it was on Go 90. You know, like, I root for Justin Fields to succeed. But many people just never give this dude a fair share of accountability for what the Bears were in 2023. And what they were a mid football team. Because Justin Fields is a mid quarterback. And nobody wants to accept that truth. Justin Fields is never going to win you a Super Bowl. So therefore, why would any team want to trade for him? Everybody's trying to figure out why nobody has pulled the trigger on Justin Fields. Well, I don't think that it should be that tough of a question to find the answer to. It's pretty obvious that NFL media and fans are way higher on Justin Fields than what the actual league is. The actual league doesn't have favorites. They see this shit for what it is. And what Justin Fields is a quarterback that he's good to help you survive through a season if you're a team like the Denver Broncos and you're just in dire need of a quarterback and you can't find anything good out there. Justin Fields is a good option for you for a year or two. But he'll never be a quarterback where you'll trust him to be your long-term answer at that position because of how he's not good in the fourth quarter. And he just isn't a consistent enough passer to have you in a position where you're going to be able to compete for Super Bowls year in and year out. So Justin Fields, to me, is extremely overrated, overvalued, and overhyped. He makes a lot of big highlight plays. Like Colin Cowherd says, he's a YouTube quarterback. You know, until Justin Fields makes improvements as a passer and he gets better in the fourth quarter, I'm not really ever going to see the Justin Fields hype. And I love Justin Fields. He's one of my favorite players in the NFL, but he just gets way too many excuses. And I'm wondering when people are finally going to hold him accountable. As a lifelong Steelers fan, I'm getting incredibly frustrated with this organization. All right. So a few days ago, they recently had a meeting with free agent quarterback Russell Wilson. I don't know why anybody thinks it's a good idea for the Steelers to even entertain the possibility of signing Russell Wilson. I don't care if it is a veteran minimum. The Broncos felt like this dude was so bad that they were willing to take an $85 million dead cap hit, NFL record, by the way, to get rid of him. And the Steelers are playing in the AFC, in the AFC North, home to two of the NFL's best quarterbacks, Joe Burrow and Lamar Jackson. Russell Wilson, at 30-something years old, declining and regressing, is not going to be the quarterback to get Pittsburgh back to a Super Bowl. I don't know why the Steelers are so okay with being a mediocre franchise now and being complacent, but it's just mind-boggling how the Steelers have mishandled making the transition from a future first ballot Hall of Famer in Big Ben to just playing musical chairs at the quarterback position, the most important position in the NFL. The Steelers lose a future Hall of Famer and they had no success plan for him. And save me the shit about how Big Ben didn't want any younger QBs on the roster. Like, you got to do what you got to do, fam. The Patriots drafted Jimmy Garoppolo despite the fact they had Tom Brady, and eventually it came down to a decision where Bill Belichick was forced to trade Jimmy Garoppolo in favor of Tom Brady. But even the Patriots had somewhat of a success plan. Mac Jones had a really good rookie season before things just completely went left. Kenny Pickett hasn't showed too much of anything to give you hope that he's going to be the guy who can get the Steelers back to the promised land, which is capturing that seventh Lombardi trophy. And neither is Russell Wilson. What the hell is signing Russell Wilson going to do? All that's going to do is make the Baltimore Ravens, the Browns, and the Cincinnati Bengals laugh, because you still aren't upgrading at quarterback. You just went from arguably the worst or the second worst quarterback in the NFL starting for you to going to like either the fifth or the fourth worst starting quarterback in the NFL. Like, what are the Steelers doing at quarterback? What is the plan? Because it seems like they don't have one. If their plan is we're going to go into this season and we're just going to have four random quarterbacks on the roster battling out with Kenny Pickett and Mason Rudolph, you don't have a plan, all right? And you're not serious about winning. If you're serious about winning, you would do what's in the best interest, and that is trading for Justin Fields. That is the best interest of the team. You don't need to trade away Deontay Johnson or George Pickens. Neither one of those two guys are the problem. The problem is the fact that this organization has mishandled the quarterback position. Like, Mike Tomlin is just so lost from reality now that I'm now starting to understand why people want this dude fired. Now, I'm not going to call for his job anymore. I have no thoughts on Mike Tomlin's job security in Pittsburgh. All right. At this point, if the dude can continue to do what he does on a yearly basis, winning with trash quarterbacks, then imagine what he can do if he actually got a good quarterback. And that's why I still push back on the criticisms of Mike Tomlin, why I still don't want to see him fired, because I think about how good he could be if he does find the right quarterback. But I don't trust him to be able to find the right quarterback. I don't trust this organization to be able to evaluate quarterback good enough that they can find a good replacement for Kenny Pickett, or they could find the true successor for Big Ben, because they still are looking for that. Ever since Big Ben retired, they've been playing Russian roulette ever since. You had Mitch Trubisky. That was a disaster. Like, I don't know what the hell the Steelers were thinking by signing Mitch Trubisky. And I told you guys when we made that signing, it was one of the worst decisions that we have ever made in free agency. And many of you guys said I was hating on Mitch Trubisky. He was going to prove me wrong. And look, he was awful. He was a disaster. And what really concerns me the most is that Mike Tomlin, when the Steelers were going against the New England Patriots, and he was asked before the game, you know, when they were doing the production interviews the week leading up to the game, why he decided to roll with Mitch Trubisky, he said, because he has experience being a franchise quarterback before. When I heard that, I knew the season was going nowhere for Pittsburgh. Even though we still managed to sneak into the playoffs, it didn't mean nothing. You know, like, I'd rather go through a Mason Rudolph this season or Justin Fields than have to sit through another year of watching Kenny, small hands, no athleticism, nothing special about him, Pickett. I mean, we keep trying to make it seem like George Pickens and Deontay Johnson are drama queens when all they want is a chance to make plays. And I can't get mad at them. How can any of us get mad at them for getting frustrated with shit quarterback play? We deserve better as a fan base. You know, like, we used to be such a great organization. Championships used to be the standard every single season in Pittsburgh. And now, all of a sudden, the standard has went down. And now we got a large amount of the fan base saying a guy like Kenny Pickett deserves a third chance to show you what he has. We know what Kenny Pickett has. At best, he's an above-average quarterback who's not good enough to win you a Super Bowl. And please don't compare him to Brock Purdy. Brock Purdy and Kenny Pickett are on two different stratospheres. They're not even on the same fucking universe. Like, Brock Purdy is here. Kenny Pickett is here. I don't care what you say about Brock Purdy benefiting from having a good team around him. When Kenny Pickett has Deontay Johnson, George Pickens, Pat Freiermuth, a good rushing attack, and Mike Tomlin as his head coach, and the dude sucks. Outside of occasionally raising his game in the fourth quarter in certain matchups, he's not good. His best showing of the season, when he had like over 300 passing yards or whatever against Cincinnati, guess how many points Pittsburgh scored in that game? 16. When Mason Rudolph became the starting quarterback, though, the Steelers' offense was averaging nearly 20 points every game. You didn't see Deontay Johnson and George Pickens getting frustrated when Mason Rudolph was in that quarterback. So why is it that they get these frustrations when Kenny Pickett is in? When you have a good quarterback, receivers don't get frustrated. You know, Kenny Pickett is a very likable guy. He's definitely a guy that I would sit down with and take a couple of shots of Don Julio with. But he's not a guy who I would want as the future and face of my organization at quarterback. He's a good backup, not good enough to win you a Super Bowl. And if you don't have a quarterback that's good enough to win you a Super Bowl, that means that you have a problem at that position and it needs to be dealt with and it needs to be improved. This is it for this episode of the JT Sports Podcast. I appreciate you guys for tuning in. If you enjoyed, leave a like, subscribe to the channel. Remember that we're not just a YouTube channel, we're a podcast. You can find this episode and every episode of the podcast in its entirety available in audio format on Apple, Google, Spotify, Amazon, wherever you get your podcasts from. The JT Sports Podcast is available. Follow us on social media. You can find us on Instagram at JT Sports_, on X at JT Sports_. If you want to connect with us, keep up with everything that's going on with the podcast, follow us there. If you have a question that you would like answered on a future episode, you can send them in the DMs on Instagram and X at JT Sports_, at JT Sports_. I appreciate you guys for tuning in, and I will see you guys shortly with another episode of the JT Sports Podcast.